I have already explained this. Physiological needs are here. Safety needs are second. Then we have the belonging and love needs. We have the self-esteem needs, the fourth one. And finally, we talk about the self-actualization. Now, from an organizational point of view, how does this applicable? From an organization's point of view, self-actualization could be in the form of excelling in one's job or successfully managing a team. I would say much beyond that. When you become unconditionally attached to the organization, you look at the organization as a spiritual center. I'm using a very bombastic word. You look at the organization as a nurturing place. It gives you a sense of self-expression. It makes you feel fulfilled. That's the time the organization where you feel self-actualized. And there are many people who are into this. And this is not the CEO alone. This is not the senior management, as most of us would like to believe. No, it can be anybody. It can be even the humble peon, the humble canteen person who's coming and delivering tea to us. This is one thing we need to recognize. When you find a meaningfulness in your work and you go because of the meaningfulness, other things get ignored. And that is what matters. You are rising above the ordinary and you're rising, becoming an extraordinary person. What are the merits? What are the usefulness of this theory? It's helpful to managers who are keen about motivating their employees. By knowing which person is stuck up in which level of his life, is he at level 1, is he at level 2, is he at level 3, level 4 or level 5 of the pyramid, we come to know. On that basis, we can give them the motivation inputs. We can encourage them. We can create conditions wherein they get motivated to go higher and higher. We can do this. It explains many variations in human behavior. Managers understand why one employee is motivated by money while another by appreciation. Very clear. We have a team of some 7 or 8 people working with us. One person is at the first level of struggling in life. So for him, money motivates. In the same team, I have another person who's beyond the first level. He's in the third level. He wants belonging. He wants love. He wants affection. He wants a pat in the back. So different strokes for different folks. This is what helps managers to understand this. And the theory also puts forth the idea that motivation is never constant. It is always changing. It's like, you know, you need to have a bath every day to be clean. Similarly, every day you need to get motivation. Because motivation is not long lasting. It goes off. And then again, you need to build it up. So when you start understanding how the hierarchy of needs are fulfilled, then it starts becoming dynamic for you. What was motivating to me yesterday may not be motivating for me today. What is motivating me for today may not be motivating tomorrow. So this keeps changing. Why does it change? Because the needs are changing. Very clear and very simple. The criticism against this theory, you know, there are people who say that this theory has got a limitation. The first criticism is that the theory propounds, it states that when one level of need is satisfied, person moves to the next level. In reality, the hierarchy of needs exists at all levels. This is what I explained earlier. People really don't wait till one need is fulfilled. While the first need is getting fulfilled, we also look for the second need and the third and the fourth. The man on the streets who is getting very less money per day, he is a daily wage earner. Even he thinks of saving on during that time, in spite of not getting 2 square meals. The same person who's trying to save is also looking for sense of belonging with people. And he also has an ambition of growing someone to become somebody. At the same time, he's got a sublime property of wanting to look at meaningfulness of his life. When does he get all this? Even when he's struggling. This is an observation, right? Because of this observation, the Maslow's pyramid does not address this. That's what people say. And it's a true thing. Does it mean that the theory is now incorrect? No. Theory is a framework. It opens up an understanding about motivation about people when there was no other model available. This was the first model available. Whenever a model is created, we look at the pluses and the minuses. Take the plus and work on the minus and develop the model further. That's what we need to do. Right? The hierarchy of needs is not the same for all persons. This is very clear. Managers may not have time to diagnose all the needs of each employee. Even if needs are identified, managers cannot offer solutions in all cases. This is an organizational issue. Okay. Now we come to another theory, the famous Douglas McGregor's theory X and theory Y. Douglas McGregor proposed 2 distinct views of human beings. One basically negative, I would call it disempowering. The labeled as theory X and the other one basically positive, which is called as empowering. Managers' view of their workers is based on certain assumptions and these are used to mold their behaviors towards their staff, towards their employees. Managers holding theory Y are said to motivate employees, but there is no evidence to prove this. Theory X assumes that employees are inherently disliking work. Theory X is, at the face of it, very negative. People dislike work. Since they dislike work, they must be coerced, they must be forced to achieve desired goals. We must be after them. Employees shrink responsibilities, shirk responsibilities, and wait for instructions. Employees do not get self-motivated. They want people to push them. And they will not fulfill responsibilities unless you push them. Most workers place security above other factors associated with work. Most of them would like to have a comfort zone. They would not like to move out of the comfort zone. Basically, they are very lazy. They are indolent. They are not self-driven. And they need to be pushed all the time. This is what Theory X presupposes. And there's a section of people who follow the behavior which Theory X talks about. At the same time, Theory X assumes that employees can view work as being a natural rest and play. Employees who are viewed with the Theory X lens, they don't look at work as natural. They feel it is something compulsive. It has to be done, and they get a pressure of doing it. So they resist it. A person will exercise self-direction and self-control if he is committed to the objects. Average person can learn to accept responsibility and creativity or the ability to take decisions widely dispersed. Theory X wants people to be like this. But people are not. Now, McGregor believed that Theory Y assumptions were more valid than Theory X. He proposed ideas like workers' participation in decision making, responsible and challenging jobs and good group relations as approaches that would maximize employees' job motivation. Okay? Now, I'll explain Theory Y to you. Theory Y is discussing about just the opposite of Theory X. It says that people are basically self-driven. You tell them to do some job once, they will follow you and they will do it. If they have any issues, they come back to you. They are self-driven. They have a larger picture. And they are not people who shirk the job because they are willing to take a risk and they have a sense of belonging. A very positive approach. So you don't have to push them. You only tell them once and they are self-driven and they get motivated. Now, which of the two appears to be better? We all of us will agree that Y is better. But remember one thing. In some scenarios, we need to use X. In some scenarios, we need to use Y. And in all of us, there's a part which is X, there's a part this is Y. So recognize in your employees, in your team, what is X and what is Y, on the basis of which we need to pump in motivation or we have to pump in certain pressure to perform. Now we come to theory, two-factor theory, which is created by this gentleman called Frederick Herzberg. It is also called as a hygiene theory or two-factor theory of motivation. It's a progression on Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs said that everything goes systematically like a pyramid. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Herzberg says, let us read it. Okay. Two-factor theory is also known as motivation hygiene theory and was propounded or created by Frederick Herzberg. He used critical incident method and observed that certain characteristics are related to job satisfaction and others to job dissatisfaction. These characteristics could be classified into intrinsic or motivation factors and extrinsic or hygiene factors. Let me explain. Herzberg's two-factor theory talks about a basic foundation required for motivation to happen. What is the basic foundation? That basic foundation, there are two parts to it, two factors. The lower factor is called as hygiene and the upper factor is called as motivation. Motivation takes place only when hygiene factors are met. What is hygiene? A hygiene is a prerequisite for health. If I want to be physically healthy, I must be physically hygienic. Physical hygiene leads to physical health. And this is about behavior, motivation. So social hygiene leads to social health. So when we are in a workplace, the workplace needs to have certain basic minimum standards of work. The table on which you are sitting, the atmosphere inside, the color and the decor, all those things should be basically hygienic. Hygienic means they must take care of the basic needs and the comfort of the individual, not very luxurious. When those basic needs are taken care of, then what happens? the person goes to the next level of achieving motivation. I take the example of the classroom, for example. Now, when you come to the classroom in a place like Wellinker, for example, the classroom is very hygienically extremely appropriate for you. We've got beautiful classrooms, well ventilated. We've got very good decor inside. The seats are pretty comfortable. So it is the basic hygiene factors that is being given to you, so that when you sit in the classroom and the lecture starts, you people are motivated to listen to the lecture. Once the basics are taken care of, it is expected that you get motivated. And most of you do get motivated. But there remains a group of people, even the hygiene factors are not enough, because something inside is making them not get motivated. That is covered under process series of motivation. Okay? So, I want to add on one more thing. The hygiene factors are there and they are almost taken for granted. Which means the hygiene factors by themselves do not motivate. There's an expression which I wanted to note down. The presence of the hygiene factors do not motivate largely. However, the absence of the hygiene factors demotivates largely. The room is very comfortable. When I'm sitting here and listening to the lecture, I take it for granted that the room is there. It's comfortable. I'm not aware that I'm comfortable because it's just happening periodically. So I take it for granted that the AC is okay. It's all there. I'm not even aware of it. But imagine the AC goes off. The lights go off. And suddenly you find the atmosphere inside becomes a little turbulent. You start feeling discomfort. Will you listen to my lecture? No. So at that point of time, you'll suddenly start realizing, oh my God, the class is little uncomfortable. And when the discomfort is going on, where is the motivation? It has gone for a toss. So, we can say the presence of the hygiene factors did not motivate you. But the absence, the removal of the AC, the removal of all those things made you feel uncomfortable. It brought about dissatisfaction. Okay? Now, this is a comparison on these sides. Hygiene factors are here. On the left-hand side, this is organization things. On one hand, we have got job dissatisfaction is high or low, and there we have job satisfaction low or high. Now, I need these hygiene factors, quality of supervision. How am I getting supervised? The basic supervision. Work is allocated and there is a delegation of work, right? Now, is the person taking care of the basics? Does he take care of your self-respect? Small things which matter to you. They are very important. Is the pay okay? Are you getting is the company policy in line with what you're doing? Physical working conditions, relationship with others, job security, these are all the basic hygiene factors. The basics for starting off to do higher things. Motivation factors are something that is more than feel good. Promotion opportunities, opportunities for personnel for growing, recognition, responsibility, achievement, you can add on more on either side. These are the basics on which this is resting. Okay? Now when the motivation factors are high, the job satisfaction is also high. When the hygiene factors are low on this side, the job dissatisfaction is high. Okay? This is how one needs to interpret this diagram. Intrinsic factors, also known as motivators, satisfiers or job content factors like work itself. The work itself is an intrinsic factor. It's something that comes from me, inside me. When I am enjoying the work, there's an intrinsic factor that's playing a major role in the way I have a job satisfaction. Job satisfaction is individual. It's not about the conditions alone. It's not about the pay alone. There's something in me that makes me feel happy when I come to the workplace. I may work in a very godforsaken place with not so good conditions, but the work proper, I am languaging through my motivation as highly satisfying. So, satisfaction is within me, not with the extrinsic factors alone. Satisfiers, job content factors like work itself, responsibility, advancement, recognition, growth seem to be related to satisfaction. When questioned, workers themselves attributed their happiness to these factors. Not pay always, not money always. But when they were unhappy, it was observed they cited extrinsic factors. When something goes wrong inside you, Don't you blame outside conditions? We are all like that. Suppose something is inside not okay, then you start blaming the outside factors. So they cited extrinsic factors like company policy, administration, supervision, working conditions. All the list is given here. These factors are known as dissatisfiers or hygiene, maintenance or job content factors. So when people were happy, unhappy, it was observed they cited extrinsic factors as the causes. It could be company policy, administration, supervision, working conditions, salary, status, security, etc. See, there are organizations, you know, for example, a production unit. There are people who come and work there and they enjoy working. But suddenly something goes wrong inside them, they know they start looking at things around oppressively. Because those are the things they take for granted. Take your own home. In your home, there is a certain type of a layout of furniture. You have got some comfort in your living room, bedroom, etc. Something happens to you, even those things start disturbing you. Right? So, those things are the basics which you take for granted for the motivation happening within you. Now, this is a point we need to understand about ourselves and others. Then the team will be able to be properly motivated. Herzberg further claimed that satisfaction and dissatisfaction are two separate characteristics of a job, and the opposite of satisfaction was not dissatisfaction. I'll say that I'm satisfied or I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied. It is not dissatisfied. Dissatisfaction is an extreme thing wherein I'm disgusted. I'm not really happy. I'm satisfied. On the other side, I'm not satisfied. Now, this is a very tricky wording. I could be satisfied with what is offered to me, or I could say I'm not satisfied. But I will not say that I'm dissatisfied. Dissatisfaction is an extreme thing which happens when the hygiene factors get destroyed or they get reduced or the motivation itself is completely lacking. Hygiene factors, it was no satisfaction. Hygiene factors when available to workers will therefore not result in satisfaction or motivation, but only in less dissatisfaction. All this is wordy thing. But the bottom line is what I told you before. The presence of the hygiene factors do not motivate largely, but the absence demotivates largely. This is the bottom line of Herzberg's two-factor theory of motivation. The method adopted by Herzberg has its limitations. When things go well, workers credit themselves, and when they go wrong, they blame extrinsic environment. It's very clear. When everything is going on well, you'll say, I did it. But when things go not well, you blame the environment. Actually, when things go on well, inside you are already feeling motivated and satisfied. So, regardless of what environment you are, everything is okay. Right? Under this method, raters may have contaminated the findings. Now, what do you mean by contamination? You know, sometimes when you are judging people, see what is hygiene factor for me may not be hygiene factor for someone else. So, it's very subjective, right? Overall measure of satisfaction was not used. There was no means of measuring it. Herzberg assumes relationship between satisfaction and productivity, which has not been proved. It's a constant battle going on in the world of training also. I'll go and conduct a training program and people are expecting that they should produce results immediately. After so much of investment of time and money in a training program, what is going to be the output in terms of rupees, paise, cost saving and profit generated? It does come. But creating a correlation, a mathematical formula is almost impossible. And the same thing is applicable in this case also. Assumes relationship between satisfaction and productivity. Satisfaction is human beings. Productivity is what comes out in the form of tangible results. Now these two, how to connect them? That relationship has not been proven so far under this particular theory. Now some contemporary or modern theories of motivation we'll discuss. And the first among them is David McClelland's three needs theory or David McClelland's need theory of needs. David McClelland's theory of needs, it's called as. Right? He states that a person's behavior is mostly motivated by any of the three needs: the need for power, the need for affiliation, and the need for achievement. You can make a note, small n hyphen capital A-C-H, small n hyphen capital A-C-H, need for achievement. Small n hyphen capital A double F-L, small n hyphen capital A double F-L. Need for affiliation. And the third one is small n hyphen POW, need for power. These are the three needs according to David McLellan, which all of us have in us. A person does not have other needs, but these are the three primary needs that motivate him, according to David McLellan. Let's take it further. The first one, he calls it as need for achievement. Employees with a high need for achievement get satisfaction when they achieve the goals that they have set. Succeeding at a task is very important to higher achiever. They are mostly rewarded in terms of money, but what they need for motivation is feedback about their achievements. Some of you listening to me may be having a very high need for achievement. In all of us, all the three needs are present. One need is usually higher than the other two. So you need to recognize what is the highest need in you. Some of you listening to me may be having a very high need for achievement. The money that comes to you is not important, but people have to validate, ah, you have achieved it. That need is there in some of you. Between two brothers in the same family, one brother may have a need for achievement, other brother may have a need for something else. Recognizes it is seen by the way you think and you behave. Next comes need for power. Employees displaying need for power derive satisfaction from their ability to control. The key word is control. Those of us who have got a need for power will find ourselves always controlling situations, always controlling people. You always want to show that you are in command and charge. So such people have a need for power. Somewhere they feel that I need to have control over situations. The actual achievement of the goal is less important for those who are holding power than the means by which the goals were achieved. These are motivated when they get positions of influence and control. There are many youngsters, like some of you listening to me, will say that I will feel happy only when I become the CEO. I want to become a vice president. The position is important. The work that you do to reach there may be only a means to achieve that position. Many social cultures, in the Indian culture, for example, many societies, many regions from where we come, we have a lot of importance given to the designation and the position, need for power. Because the designation is synonymous for some people as equal to power. It need not be all the time. Need for affiliation. Employees displaying need for affiliation derive satisfaction from social and interpersonal activities. If you have a need for affiliation, then you are one of those persons who naturally feels happy when people are around, when you mix with people. The people orientation, the interpersonal orientation which some of us have, is amply depicting the need for affiliation within us. Such individual will prefer to work with their friends rather than technically competent people. Imagine all the three types coming together. There is such an amount of diversity in the way they look at the same function. Right? The achievement motivation theory highlights importance of matching the individual with the job. Employees with high achievement needs thrive on work that is challenging. The research also shows that managers can raise achievement needs of subordinates by creating proper work environment, by permitting independence, increasing personal responsibility and autonomy, gradually making tasks more challenging, raising and rewarding high performance. Very long worded. In simple context, it simply means, if I recognize that you are having the need for achievement very high, which is evident from the way you conduct yourself in the organization, all I need to do is to motivate you by giving you achievement oriented work. Very simple. At the same time, psychology suggests that the acquisition of motives normally occurs in childhood and hence cannot be taught to adults. Methodology used by McLellan has its own limitations, and need for employees are permanently acquired and cannot be changed socially through the education and training. In other words, these three points are telling us that we are inborn with it. I tend to believe that we make our choices at a very young age. Subconscious choices. Psychologists say that people make their choices about what they want, what motivates them, at the age of 7 months or 6 months after they are born. It is that early, right? So, taking it further, we come to the next theory, which is called as the equity theory. Stacey Adams theory of equity, or Stacey Adams equity theory. The equity theory, also known as social comparison theory, because we compare people with each other, or it's also called as the inequity theory, is based on the assumption that individuals are motivated by their desire to be equitably treated in their work relationships. Everybody wants a fair play, a democracy. Everybody wants to be treated like an equal, although we are not equal. An employee compares his job inputs and outcomes with another employee having similar work and education background. If his input outcome ratio is equal to that of the other employee, there is equity. If not, he will try to correct inequity by altering inputs or outcomes. Simply stated, there's an equation. Work done by A divided by reward given to A is always seen to be greater than or less than the work done by B to the reward that B gets. What does it mean? It means I do some work X, some work I'm doing, same work you're also doing. Okay? And this work I'm doing, I'm getting a certain reward, say 10,000 rupees. And you're doing the same work and you're getting a reward maybe higher or less or maybe equal. But we keep on comparing. This theory is based on two assumptions, two major findings about people. One is we are constantly comparing ourselves with others. This comparison is either openly done or it is done latently within us. Second point is this comparison is very high. It is pronounced at the workplace. The workplace is a very important identity for all human beings. And hence at the workplace, I'm constantly wanting to know whether I'm being treated well. So I keep comparing. Consider the times when the increments take place in your organization. Immediately after the increment, you can find groups of people sitting in the canteen, cafeteria, discussing increments about X, Y, Z, comparing and contrasting. Some of them are feeling very depressed. Some of them are feeling elated. Some of them are feeling jealous. Now, all this is a clear-cut sign about how the motivation is related to the work and the rewards that we get. Equity theory. What are the merits? The plus points is equity theory recognizes the influence of social comparison processes on motivation. If employees observe inequity, they are motivated to restore equity. If I feel that you are rewarded more than me, there's a very good likelihood that I'll start working harder to come to your level. Now, these are all basically perceptions. But perceptions matter. My perception is my reality. If I feel that X is getting rewarded more than me, I will start working very hard to become like X. When I become like X, I look at Y then I want to become like him. So this is a constantly we keep on running to become equal to someone. We are all doing it. Recognize it that you're doing it because that recognition is important for you to know what is motivating you. The theory adopts a realistic approach to motivation. It states that a major share of motivated behavior is based on the perceived situation. That's what I said, perception, rather than the actual self or the circumstances. It's all in the mind. It's all the way I perceive things. Right? What is the criticism against the theory? The theory is not clear as to how a person chooses or changes the other person with whom he compares his input outcome. Why do I do it? How does it happen? That inside story, we are not able to fathom. This is a content theory of motivation, by the way. A process theory, I'm sorry. Now, in this, the how and why of it is not very clear. Right? The relationship between input and outcome is not studied. Why is it that some people do so much of work and they get less paid, they're still happy? And why is it that some people are doing little work and they're getting more paid, yet they're unhappy? Haven't we seen this happening many times? Now, this doesn't explain it. Right? The feeling of inequity may force one employee to quit the job, while another employee may change the person to whom they are comparing themselves. The method of resolution used is criticized. In other words, when the inequity comes, people take some actions. Either they work hard towards making it happen to the way they want it to happen, or they will withdraw and even resign. So this, most of the resignation that happen at the core of it, there is an inequity that people are experiencing. Inequity means not feeling equal. There's a feeling that comes. Some treatment given to him, some words that have been told to him, the way the boss has actually praised his colleague compared to him, all these weigh a lot on people's minds.